So to begin, can you explain the situation of a lot of the Palestinian refugees in Montreal in terms of where they're coming from and how they're living right now in Montreal?
Well, around 3 to 4 years ago, there are several hundred Palestinian refugees that came to Canada to claim refugee status. The great majority of the Palestinian refugees that came to Canada come from Palestinian refugee camps in Lebanon. Basically, during the creation of the State of Israel in 1948, what is known as Al-Nakba, the catastrophe for Palestinians and Arabs. There were over 800,000 Palestinian refugees that were created due to the creation of the State of Israel. About 400,000 Palestinian refugees today live in refugee camps all across Lebanon. And the conditions in these refugee camps is extremely difficult. Due to Lebanese legislation, Palestinians are not allowed to work in over 78 professions. They're not allowed to own property. They're not allowed to have access to public health care or public education. And as you can imagine, for any Palestinian, as soon as you're born Palestinian in a refugee camp in Lebanon, you're really never going to be treated equally on the most basic things, most basic rights, and most basic needs in terms of working, owning property, studying. So your only hope is to work in hard labor for the rest of your life. And obviously added to that are the political tensions that exist in Lebanon. There was 16 years of civil war. A lot of the refugee camps went through massacres. A lot of them have been destroyed several times and rebuilt. So you can imagine the repercussions of that on the Palestinian refugee population there. So the only option that most Palestinians see they have in Lebanon is to try to leave as quickly as possible. So as soon as an opportunity comes their way, they try to escape these harsh conditions. And this is what happened to many of them about 3, 4 years ago. They got the chance to come to Canada through doctorate acceptances that they got at a US university, which allowed them to acquire a student visa there. And as soon as they went to the States, they came across the border and applied for refugee status here. Some of the Palestinians also come from the occupied territories. So now they're here in Canada. Most of them have been here for 3, 4 years. And a good number of the Palestinian refugees have been rejected refugee status. So now they're all facing deportation, awaiting any moment now to receive a letter by mail asking them to leave the country within a couple of weeks. Or they have already received that letter and they defied the decision taken by the Immigration Refugee Board and took the difficult decision of staying in Canada, living underground, which is obviously extremely difficult because you cannot do anything if you don't have any status here. So they can't rent out an apartment, they can't open a bank account, they cannot work legally. There's nothing that they don't have access to health care, and at any second they can be caught by immigration agent or the police and treated as criminals and put in detention and then deported. So as you can imagine, after all they lived through in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, as well as in the refugee camps in Lebanon, to have to come here and again face a different form of injustice, but nonetheless an injustice, is extremely difficult for most of the Palestinians.
Now, why have they been denied refugee status coming into Canada?
So what happened with the Palestinians, they ended up in front of some commissioners who were completely ignorant of the situation in the Palestinian refugee camps in Lebanon, and were also ignorant of Canadian jurisprudence that might be compatible with the claim being made by the Palestinians. And they took basically decisions that were completely biased, very opinionated, and that lacked any form of respect for the facts that exist on the ground. But in the case of Montreal, there is two commissioners who have rejected over 60% of the refugees who have been rejected by these two commissioners. And if you see in the decisions, basically they practically copy paste what they say in every decision into another decision. So as soon as they get any Palestinian from Lebanon or from the West Bank, they just copy paste their previous decisions. So the same lie, the same discriminatory decision, the same ignorant decision that was taken probably in one of the first decisions by that commissioner, just if it ends up affecting every single person. So the so-called case-by-case procedure, the fact that Immigration Canada and the Immigration Refugee Board pretends to deal with every case individually and as humanly as possible, is simply not true. And this is proof of that. And once that rejection is given by one commissioner, and once that decision is taken, there's absolutely no real recourse to reverse that decision. There is two procedures that are left. One is asking for a judicial review of that decision by the Federal Court of Canada. And in 99% of the cases, the Federal Court decides not to even review the case. Not that they review it and then reject it 99% of the time. They don't even review it 99% of the time. And finally, there's a procedure which is called the pre-removal risk assessment, which is nothing but a bureaucratic procedure. And in 97% of the cases, these files are rejected. So as you can see, the Palestinian refugees, they faced a racist, ignorant commissioner in some cases. And after that, they had absolutely no recourse to reverse that decision.
Now, earlier you mentioned the fact that a lot of the refugees who are coming to Canada, the Palestinian refugees, who aren't being granted refugee status, are forced to go underground rather than be deported. One of the more well-known cases here in Montreal is the case of the Ayoub family who were faced with a deportation order and who are staying in a church right now in Notre-Dame-de-Grâce. Maybe you could talk a bit about the case of the Ayoub family.
Yeah, the Ayoub family, basically, they're a family of three. There's Khalil Ayoub, his brother Nabih Ayoub, and the wife of Nabih, Therese Ayoub. And they're three elderly Palestinians, close to their 70s now. And obviously they're 7 years old, so they were children living in Palestine before the creation of the State of Israel. So these are things, you know, their life in Palestine as children is something that they recall pretty well. And obviously with the creation of the State of Israel and the expulsion of the Palestinians, they also were expelled, and they went to a Palestinian refugee camp in Lebanon called the Baye refugee camp. It's in the north of Beirut. And they lived in that camp, obviously first living in tents like most people. And then when it was clear that people were going to have to stay in these refugee camps for more and more years to come, and even decades, these houses turned into homes made out of cement, but obviously in extremely bad conditions. And, you know, there's absolutely no infrastructure in these refugee camps. And you cannot expand the refugee camps. A certain area was given where Palestinian refugees can live, which are refugee camps, but they cannot expand them. So the populations in these camps have like tripled, if not more, but with the same space. So you can imagine the conditions under which they lived in these refugee camps, with no proper water, proper water distribution, sewage system, electricity. And then there was the war, the civil war in Lebanon that started in 1975. And this had a huge effect, obviously, on a lot of people in Lebanon. A lot of civilians, over 200,000 civilians were killed during that war. And the Ayoub family, some of them were injured during the war. And they had to flee the refugee camp of Baye to go to other areas in Lebanon. So several times they had to go from home to home. They lived homeless for months, living in the streets, and squatting different houses. And eventually they ended up going from camp to camp, and they ended up in the refugee camp of Ain al-Hilwe, which is in the south of Lebanon. The largest refugee camp in Lebanon, which I mentioned earlier, also faces some of the most, faces more problems than most refugee camps in Lebanon. And after living in the harsh conditions of Ain al-Hilwe, they came to Canada and claimed refugee status here. And their refugee status was rejected, and they received a deportation date. And as you said, instead of complying with that deportation date, they met people from the Notre-Dame-de-Grâce Church in Montreal who were already aware of the conditions of the Palestinian refugees here in Canada, and were fully supportive of the Ayoub family. And they decided to take in the Ayoub family into the church, and they've been living in the basement of the church, not seeing the sun for over 8 months now. And we're continuing the struggle to try to stop their deportation and grant them status here in Canada.
Mm-hmm. There also have been some successes to this campaign up to this point. Maybe you want to share some of those.
Well, I would say the biggest success until now is that a lot of people know about the situation of Palestinian refugees in the refugee camps in Lebanon and Palestine due to the work that's being done by the Palestinian refugees themselves as they go around to meetings, organizations, demonstrations, and they tell people their stories. So that in itself is a success. The other success is also that Immigration Canada now knows that they have there's a battle going on in terms of fighting these deportations. So for every single Palestinian that the coalition knows of that's facing deportation, there's going to be a fight put up in terms of stopping their deportation. And that in itself, is a success because a lot of groups, a lot of people, individuals in this society who are backing up the Palestinian refugees and other refugees are now more aware of these issues and are now willing to stand up even more for refugees that are facing deportation. And to speak more specifically, there's the case of Usama Saleh, who's from the West Bank town of Tulkarm, whose refugee status was rejected for discriminatory reasons. And we were able to fight his deportation publicly and get several politicians to back him up and a lot of organizations and individuals within the society here in Montreal. And his case went to the federal court. Just one day before his deportation was supposed to occur, there was a court decision that halted his deportation. And recently, he was granted leave, which means that the court agreed to not just postpone his deportation date, but they agreed to review his case. And hopefully, he has a very strong case. They will be able to stop that deportation.
Maybe to talk a bit about this actual demonstration that's coming up on September the 18th. This broadcast is happening just before the lead up to that. And it seems like the time picked for this demonstration is fairly significant. It's happening just after the anniversary of the Sabra and Shatila massacre. Maybe you could speak a bit to why you picked this time and what this demonstration is seeking to do.
Well, for several reasons. First of all, the demonstration is happening on the Saturday, 18th of September. The massacre of Sabra and Shatila happened on the 16th and 17th of September, 1982. So over 22 years ago now. Sabra and Shatila are refugee camps in Beirut. Over 22 years ago, during the Israeli invasion of Beirut, the Israeli army was controlling the refugee camps, while they were controlling these camps, there were militias, phalangist militias, phalangist Lebanese militias that are allied to the Israelis at the time, that went inside the refugee camp, where most of the Palestinian fighters had already left in a deal that was signed with the international community and the PLO, and so most of the people left in the refugee camps were unarmed civilians. These militias went in and day and night for 2 days nonstop, minute after minute, hour after hour, they slaughtered people in cold blood. According to the Red Cross, over 2,750 people were killed, from children to women, men, elderly, children. Nobody was spared, and 2,750 people were killed. A lot of women were raped. So obviously this was a deep wound in the conscience of most Palestinians, and it still is. And one of the persons that was responsible for this massacre was Ariel Sharon, who was at the time Minister of Defense and is today the Prime Minister of Israel, who continues his policy of massacre in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. So obviously a lot of the Palestinian refugees, as I stated before, come from these refugee camps in Lebanon. So to some of them, the massacre of Sabra Shatila was a lived reality. Mm-hmm. And other than the fact that we do want to commemorate this massacre, which people need to know about, there's a direct link between what happened there before and what's happening now, and the fact that there are Palestinian refugees here in Canada. So it's also to raise awareness towards that link, for people to know that, yes, there was a massacre, and what happened to the people after that massacre? Well, some of them came to Canada and applied for refugee status, some who survived that massacre, and other massacres that happened during the Lebanese Civil War.
Now, this this demonstration and also this broadcast and everything that we're doing, that we're trying to do to raise awareness around these issues, relates a lot to the Palestinian right of return, which is often known as like one of the main things we speak about when we speak about Palestinian human rights. So I'm wondering, how does this demonstration that's calling for an end to deportations of Palestinians from Canada, how does that relate to the Palestinian right of return?
Well, it relates to it in many ways. I mean, first, when we talk about the right of return, the first thing we talk about, it's the Palestinian refugees, because it's their right of return that we're fighting for. In terms of today's reality, I mean, you know, the title of the demonstration is called Stateless and Deported. I mean, this is not the first time Palestinians are being expelled from somewhere, are being deported. They were deported and expelled from Palestine in 1948. They were expelled from Jordan in the 70s. They were expelled from Lebanon in the 80s. And they continue to be expelled because nobody can sustain living in harsh conditions continuously for the rest of their lives in refugee camps. So the only sustainable solution for the Palestinian refugees and the only just solution for the Palestinian refugees is to have the right of return granted, which is the right to return back to their homeland in Palestine where they came from. So obviously all of this relates to it. Now the fact that Palestinians, due to the extremely harsh conditions and treatment that they're facing, for example in Lebanon, they had to escape these conditions to come to Canada and claim refugee status, that's still compatible with the right of return. What is being said, and this is very important because this is more in touch with reality, is that Palestinian refugees do not need to live or be treated as animals in order for them to keep their right of return. Just the fact that they're Palestinians and they had been expelled from Palestine 56 years ago, that in itself grants them the right to return to their homeland, a right that has been recognized by every single international legal convention that was created by Western countries themselves. Mm-hmm. So this is how, you know, this demonstration, the Palestinian refugees, the fact that they're in Canada fighting their deportation, this is how it relates ultimately to the right of return.